This is
Black Entertainment, and we are in the Vampire Week.
Yes, for our freaking fright film month of Halloween.
Yes,
and we're with so for our week of vampires, our new movie came out in 1998. Our Thursday movie, we're going to go back to the original vampire movie where it all got started. And today, we always, every Halloween, have to do a John Carpenter movie.
Yes.
We are doing John Carpenter's Vampires.
Yes.
And last week, I live tweeted this as I watched it for the very first time. it brought out some anger issues in me. But what was happening in 98 when this movie came out?
And okay, so in 98, what we were watching in 98, we're going from 5 to 1. Veronica's Closet, number 5, Monday Night.
Brooke Shields action going there.
Yeah, you know, can't go wrong with Miss Brookie. Monday Night Football, number 4, Frasier, number 3, Friends, number 2, and ER was number 1. And the song October 1998 was the first night for Monica. This is the era where it was like Monica and like Brandy, kind of like, you know, the young black girl, R&B girl power type situation. And Destiny's Child was popping around the time before Beyonce went solo.
Which one of the, because didn't one of those girls die in an airplane crash, or is that
something? Yeah, no, that was Aaliyah. Aaliyah.
Was that also, was she popular in 98 also?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, she was a solo. She was like a solo artist. She wasn't with a group.
Right.
Yeah, she was in Romeo Must Die. I did not watch Queen of the Damned, but they say she was like kind of the only watchable thing about that movie.
I mean, I did because I read the books and I loved the books. And I would agree with that assessment. She was the best part of that movie.
May she rest in peace. So that was the, you know, 98 stuff we were getting into. And then late October 98, you know, John Carpenter decided to throw his hat in the vampire genre himself. You know, he's
right. 2 months before this movie came out, the ultimate 90s vampire movie was released that is still holds up today. And that was Wesley Snipes' Blade, came out in August. So this was sort of 2 months later, and had live up to after Blade came out that felt very cutting edge and modern.
Oh yeah. I mean, but do you think it was a competition? You think it was like vampires had to like surpass or live up to this comic book property that so happened to have been a hit?
I feel like, you know, we were at the end of the 90s, we were approaching the next century, and Blade came out and it felt very modern and different for a vampire movie. Whereas when Vampires came out, it felt like your old school traditional, like white dude hunting down vampires type of situation. It felt like a throwback versus something modern that we could really sink our teeth into.
Yeah, you hit the nose right on the head with the throw. Like it felt like a throwback. It felt like, and to your point, you know, John Carpenter, the reason why he took on this particular story is because he wanted to have more of a spaghetti western gritty type, you know, approach to the vampire genre. you know, like rural, dusty, desolate, like not, just like a handful of people kind of, was it the standoff type, metaphors, stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Like Blade was just like in your face, just kinetic. It was martial arts. It was Wesley Snipes doing his damn thing.
The music was modern. It was like techno EDM, which was really hitting the airwaves at the time. So it felt more current, whereas this movie felt like it could have been filmed in the 70s or the 80s.
Yeah. It could have been John Carpenter's follow up movie after Halloween.
So for those that don't know who John Carpenter is,
what's wrong with you?
Last Halloween we did his classic movie It.
The Thing.
The Thing. But what are some of the other big John Carpenter movies that people might recognize?
Starman, the first Halloween, original Halloween, 1978? That Halloween.
I think it was 77.
Yeah, so that Halloween, his masterpiece, in my opinion, Big Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York. They Live. How can I forget that? They Live. Just the classic, most profound commentary on capitalism in America. I mean, it's amazing. With Roddy Piper.
I recently rewatched that, and it's ridiculous and amazing all at the same time.
I mean, that's okay.
It's like, there's a fight scene in the alley.
That's like 5 minutes long.
Oh my God. It is the most ridiculous and most realistic fight scene. And he just wants the other guy to put on some sunglasses so he can see what's really going on. He's like, I'm not putting them on. He's like, put them on. Just beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah.
About sunglasses.
Yeah. All for sunglasses. Yeah. So, if you're familiar with some of these movies, John Carpenter is a very unique director in the sense that he usually take a genre and really lean into it. Like, he don't scale back. He don't question the genre he's tackling. He kind of like, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm doing it. I'm going balls in. Just like, with They Live and, Halloween, The Thing. Like, he don't have ass. If he's going to take on a horror, he's going to take it on. If he's going to take on something, post-apocalyptic, like Escape from New York, he's going to go all in. It's one thing you can't deny about a John Carpenter movie. He have a distinct vision. and he sees it out, for better or worse. Like, he have an aesthetic, and he have a vision, he have a way of storytelling. And he love anti-heroes. He love, the questionable main characters. They're not your clean-cut, heroes. They're very flawed. That's kind of like his staple.
I mean, from Snake to Jack Crow in this movie, mm-hmm. Snake's from Escape from New York. They are anti-heroes that are put in situations where they somehow have to be a hero at the same time.
Yeah, even though given to their own devices, they would totally walk away from the situation. If they didn't have a stake in said situation, they'd probably be like, okay, guys, you handle it, I'm out. It's got nothing to do with me.
Yeah. So, vampires. So this is a movie about vampire hunters. That have been working for the Catholic Church And they discover that there's a master vampire that is looking for an ancient church relic that will make them daywalkers. So the difference between this daywalker and Blade daywalker is Blade is like out there to save humanity by killing vampires, going against his nature, and these daywalker vampires, similar to Blade, how the regular vampires want to get sunscreen so they can go out and kill lots of humans when they're out and about.
Right. In the first Blade, isn't that what Deacon Frost was looking for? He was looking for that tomb, so like with the 12 ancestors and blah blah, so he can be immortal kind of thing, so he could walk the day, but he needs the blood of the daywalker and yada yada yada. So at the end of the day, vampires just want to be like us, you know they just want to
walk in the sun.
They want to chill, they want to hike in the day,
They want to see the sunrise, watch the sunset. Just feel that lovely warm sun hitting your face as you're sunbathing out by the pool.
Yeah, you know, which is pretty much the main reason why they're going insane, because they're not getting enough sun.
Yep.
Vitamin D. Yeah, man, they stripped of vitamin D and humanity. So James Woods is our main character. Gentleman said character is Jack Crow. He leads a band of ragtag vampire hunters that go from
like dirty, gross, sexist pig.
Oh yeah,
vampire hunters. Like imagine if a biker gang just happened to be a group of vampire hunters.
Yeah, which is a huge departure from your standard, you know, approach to a group of vampire hunters. So they go from city to city, a more rural area to rural area, you know, finding nests or homes that vampires kind of hide and nestle in during the day. They drag them out literally and kill the horde.
Right. So this is my first major issue with the movie is the way that they kill a nest of vampires. The movie opens with them discovering a nest of vampires in an old like rundown house, and I feel like in life you should work efficiently. Smart and not make life difficult for yourself. And these vampire hunters are making life difficult for themselves. Just burn the fucking house down. And then vampires who are trying to escape the flames during the day, the sun will kill them, or you chop off their heads or shoot or spike through the heart. If we've learned anything from Buffy and Supernatural, like there are easy, efficient ways to kill vampires. But no, guys, do it one at a time. They shoot a crossbow arrow through the vampire. The crossbow is tied to like a pulley system. It's tied to a car. And then they like drag them out into the sun one at a time. It's just not efficient. It's putting lots of vampire hunters at risk because you're only doing one at a time.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they are the type of group that if you presented that type of criticism to how they do things, and there is a better efficient way for the boys to, you know, get it done and get it done quickly so they can get to their motels and hookers, they probably would laugh you off because, you know, they seem like some stubborn Like, but that's how we always do it. We always drag them out. What are you talking about?
You don't have room to learn like the more efficient way because this is how we've always done it type of situation. Agreed.
Yeah. So that's why when they met their quick demise, I mean, it was kind of like, well, yeah, they're assholes. It's like, yeah, you can slaughter them. It's fine.
Yeah. So right after we see how they kill vampires inefficiently, we then follow all the vampire hunters back to a dirty motel. I did appreciate the name of the motel. I think it was called like
the Sun God.
Sun God. Yeah. that was a nice little nod to what's going on, where all the vampire hunters are drinking, doing drugs, and hooking up with or paying sex workers in order to get their rocks off.
Mm-hmm. And this is where we meet the amazingly awesome Cheryl Lee.
She's the best thing in the entire movie,
Laura Palmer herself. I mean, after Twin Peaks, I always wonder what happened to her. Like, is she one of those actors that just kind of falls into obscurity and never like come out and do anything? Like, this is a testament of like John Carpenter. Like, he can get the most like obscure actors and just have them in. That's awesome. Like, Laura Palmer chilling. It was so good seeing her.
It was, yes. So the reason why she was cast in this was because Carpenter saw her in Twin Peaks and liked her so much that he wanted her in this film. So yay for Twin Peaks for inspiring him to cast the best thing in this movie.
Yeah, and John Carpenter definitely looks like seems like a director that have watched Twin Peaks. because his brain is kind of on the same wavelength, so to speak.
Yep. And then Jack Crow, again, played by James Wood, his left-hand man, his, like, main dude, is played by Daniel Baldwin. Alec Baldwin was up for the role. He was busy, had something else going on, so he volunteered his brother. So we got the Daniel Baldwin.
Is he the oldest? He looks like he's like the older
Baldwin. I would imagine.
Yeah. The older, pudgier Baldwin.
There's so many of them, it's hard to keep track. But let's go with the older one.
Yeah, that's true. And then we're introduced to the head, the leader, the main vampire, played by Thomas Ian Griffin from Karate Kid 3 fame.
Right. So, I mean, I was going to say because it's the 80s. No, it was the 90s. I feel like 80s and 90s, the big white dude always plays the bad guy. So, Thomas Ian Griffin playing the bad guy in Karate Kid 3, playing the bad guy in Vampires.
I'm trying to figure out another movie he was in. He was in a few more films. I could be wrong.
He was. He has one of those faces that you're like, I recognize him, but I don't remember what you've been in.
Yeah.
He was in Triple X and Excessive Force.
Yes, he was in Triple X. He was the agent at the beginning that got killed. Okay, that makes sense. Nice. right on. So now we see him. He goes in, he wipes out the crew with the exception of Montoya and Crow. And Charlize's character was bitten by the head vampire, Valak. So Crow and Montoya is about to like leave her and like, okay, she's a goner, she's dead. But Crow tells Montoya, we need her because she's bitten. She has a psychic link to the person to the vampire that bit her, so we can use her as a LoJack tracking device to get to Valak so they can intercept whatever he's trying to do.
That comes directly from Bram Stoker's Dracula novel, in that whenever someone's bitten or seduced by the vampire, that they do have that psychic connection and can therefore sort of see through their eyes, so to speak.
Right. She was seeing a lot. Then we slowly see the transformation with her. At the same time, she's helping them out trying to find a valet, kind of find out valet needs the relic, and the relic is the Black Cross. This huge Black Cross.
The Black Cross was there when he was made into a vampire, and basically he was cursed by the church, and that, like, unlike what happens in Bram Stoker's Dracula, or a lot of other, like, vampire origin stories, he was cursed by the church, and that's why he became a vampire.
Right. So, and he just wanted to, you know, it's weird. So, I'm seeing a pattern with, you know, a couple of John Carpenter's movies. Okay, so David Lopez from Big Trouble Little China, right? Like, he, like the main baddie, he was cursed with no flesh. So he had to marry or get with a woman with green eyes, you know, so he can be mortal again. So, like, Valak needs the Black Cross so he can see the sun again and be a daywalker. So it's like...
Right. And the thing, the alien, has to absorb humans in order to be human again.
Or, I guess, live? I don't know. They're more parasites than anything. So I see the, I kind of see the pattern with John. So right on. So pretty much the bulk of the story is kind of the search for Valak and Crow.
The underlying theme of his movies is that it's that search for humanity within yourself. Yeah. And using exterior things, whether it's a cross, a woman with green eyes, or another human, that is what you use to discover your humanity.
Yeah. Even if it's a twisted form of humanity. Like you're saying, going back to what they were before. Yeah. Kind of situation. And so, you know, we had that, and then we are introduced to a new padre, because the old padre was, you know, sliced up. I have to do like a sidebar on the padre that got killed.
After you do your sidebar on the father that got killed, I'm going to do a sidebar on the father that replaced him.
Yawn. All right. The people our age that watch, you know, old school, you know, like, you know, television would know the old padre in this movie that, you know. So the older padre was Julio in Sanford and Son. So for all my Sanford and Son people, that was Julio. So Julio became a padre and was helping hunt vampires. He was in a lot of other, like, old, like, 70s, 80s shows. So he's so recognizable, but I know.
Right. His name is Gregory Sierra.
Yeah. A.K.A. Julio from Sanford and Son. The one that Fred Sanford was always talking about, and, you know, and Julio had a pet goat that would just come and terrorize Fred Sanford and give Fred Sanford heart attacks.
I think I recognize him more from Barney Miller.
He's in Barney too. He was in so many shows, like TV shows. He was in an episode of Murder, She Wrote.
The original serial killer. He was also in an episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. So, and X-Files.
Nice. Yeah, you know, he gets around. All right, so... Yeah,
he's like a character actor. Yeah. Okay, so my sidebar on the new father, played by Tim Guiney, was he was in Blade.
Was he the doctor?
The doctor that has a crush on the doctor.
Yes.
That ends up it that's like, yes.
Yes. I was like, he looked so, every time I watch Vampires, I'm like, he was in something. He was the ex, he was the stalky ex-boyfriend doctor. Yeah. See, so hey, John Carpenter's like, hey, you know, I dug in Blade, like, why don't you do another vampire movie? He was like, of course, you're John Carpenter, of course I'm going to be in this movie. See, so yeah, gotta give him some props for reaching out on getting a Blade actor.
I did like Father Adam in the movie. Cheryl Lee was still the best thing, but second was Father Adam, Tim Guinea.
yeah, even though he was getting slapped around like the Three Stooges most of the movie, but that was on him. Only thing he had to do was just tell them what was going on. What was the Vatican up to? What was the end game for him?
Okay, so this goes into one of my other issues in the movie is that you have these vampire hunters. Why are you keeping secrets from them when they're out there hunting the master? Just tell them what the fuck is going on so that they can do their job correctly.
Ooh, can you say Expendables? All right. Yeah, so they're like, they're Expendables. You know, like, they get no information. They know there's a particular objective they have to do. No questions asked, you know. And if you ask a question, you're not getting an answer.
Yeah. And then so another issue. So once the master vampire takes out everyone except for Jack Crow, James Wood, and Daniel Baldwin's characters and has infected Cheryl Lee, James Woods like goes off to go talk to the church and get a new priest when he gets like Father Adam, and he leaves Daniel Baldwin and Cheryl Lee together. So that like Daniel Baldwin can figure out like what she's seeing so they can track the master. And like their entire interaction is also very problematic. It's very sexist. It's very like abusive relationship bullshit going on. And it was like, I had issues with it.
Well, I mean, you gotta kind of put it in context. It's like you're dealing with a guy who makes a living killing vampires. And once she's bit, he don't see her as a woman anymore. Right?
Well, I feel like he's the type of man that probably treats women all the same regardless.
How dare you talk of the Baldwin like that? Totally. But then again, as you know, as the story progressed, doing like from certain circumstances, he started to like empathize more because he's kind of on the same journey as she is.
Right. He was bit.
So yes. It's like, all right, now I see what you going through. So we're in this together type situation. And, you know, then he started, like, fist fighting Crow for, like, being... So he was seeing how much he was an asshole through Crow's interaction with her. And he's kind of like, oh, damn, I guess I was that much of an asshole to her. I guess I need to defend her honor since, you know...
The story is you can't understand the victim until you also become a victim.
Boom! See?
Very GOP perspective on life.
Man, that was good, dude. I dug that one. See, you just dug some wisdom with the dynamics of those two. See, at first you hated it, but then it was a slight message with those two at the end. Yeah. It's cool. Well, like I said, we're not gonna really give the whole ending away if you haven't seen this movie. But yeah, you know, it's a Western. You know, it's a vampire guy.
Huh? The vampire hunters win because it's a vampire movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no twist. There's no. There's no interview with the vampires type situation where you think Lestat is dead, but he's still alive. Yeah. All right. So our rating system.
So it's safe on the sofa. Mm-hmm. Grabbing my chainsaw to take out the bad guy.
Or steak.
Going outside and just giving up my life towards the serial killer.
Or vampires.
Or vampires, yeah.
All right, so you're strapping your boots on and you're running out.
Oh yeah, I'm out in the middle of the street, just saying, you know, I'm here for the purge. Take me.
So that's a no for Genoa. I'll grab my steak. I'm not gonna go out. I'm gonna grab a steak. I just can't flat out dismiss this one. Maybe because there's a slight bias, but it's definitely not Carpenter's strongest film. Out of this filmography, is definitely like one of his weakest outings. But I'm a sucker for westerns. I'm a sucker for kind of like that, you know, grimy, dusty, desolate type. You know, story. Laura Palmer's always great. I've seen worse vampire films. I just put it in.
There's definitely worse vampire films out there. Gene Siskel thought that James Wood should have been nominated for an Oscar for this. I would highly disagree with him. I felt James Wood's acting was very flat. But I guess it was out of character for the type of roles he normally took. So Gene Siskel was very excited about it. This movie was also the reason why John Carpenter decided to continue to work in Hollywood, because he was really burnt out. He'd had a bunch of flops in the 90s, and this was his most successful movie in the 90s.
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, a little resurrection of Carpenter. So there you have it. Genoa says watch Blade and all, everything else. I say watch Blade, of course, but you know, if you want something different with a different spin, with a more Western spin on the vampire genre, yeah, but check that out. I mean, it's only an hour and 40 some minutes. It's not long. And like I said, the pacing is good pacing. It's not a slow film. I mean, every scene.
I would say if you want a Western vampire movie, go watch From Dusk to Dawn.
You know, well, that's another conversation. Okay, so, you know, like, I would say From Dusk to Dawn is a vampire movie light, meaning it's not a full-on vampire movie. I mean, the first, like, you know, 40 minutes or so, you with Clooney and Tarantino. It's like your whole kind of Pulp Fiction-y type, you know, road trip robbers. And then when they get to the bar, that's when the vampire movie kicks in. But if you want to watch this up, beginning to end vampire movie, I'd say check this one out. But watch both of them. They're good. So there you have it, guys. We will go way back on you guys Thursday. I mean, way back.
We're going back to the original.
Yes, the original.
The original vampire movie. We're going back to where it all started in 1922.
That's the original article, so get ready. Well, until Thursday, wish everyone safe physical distancing and
wear a mask and vote.
Yes. Hold on. We'll be right back.
home alone.